Well, hang on a minute. Maybe I'll be able to read it.
Okay.
I think I'm going to be able to read this. It would help if somebody turned on the light up there. Unless I decide it's too bright, we'll see. Okay. Okay. Here is the legend of Cain and Abel. The story itself is a legend, and I suspect pure legend. In other words, none of the details are actually historical, although I can't rule out the possibility that some are. Okay, but the story contains certain themes, and like most ancient legends, the point is not whether there's a historical root to the thing or not. Back then, you grew up, you're hearing the story, and you don't know what's strictly legend and strictly historical. You know, you can't go to the library and find and dredge up the ancient history, right? There's no newspaper more than all you know is the story, and the whole question of what's actually historical, and what is what we would now call fiction, that distinction doesn't really exist. The point of the story is not whether it really happened in that sense. The point of the story is the meaning of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Genesis 4. It begins the man. Okay, in Hebrew, the phrase the man, in Hebrew, that's Abel. I mean Adam. The word Adam means the man.
Okay.
So the name of the first man is the man. He the man. Okay, the man had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, "I have produced the man with the help of the Lord." Next, she bore his brother Abel. Abel became a keeper of flocks, and Cain a tiller of the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought an offering to the Lord from the fruit of the soil, while Abel, for his part, brought one of the best firstlings of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not. Cain greatly resented this, and was crestfallen. So the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you so resentful and crestfallen? If you do well, you can hold up your head. But if not, sin is a demon lurking at the door and his urges toward you. Yet you can be his master. Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out in the field. And when they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord asked Cain, where's your brother Abel? He answered, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? The Lord said, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the soil. Therefore, you shall be banned from soil that opened up its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. If you till the soil, it shall no longer give you its produce. You shall become a restless wanderer on the earth. Cain then said to the Lord, my punishment is too great to bear. Since you have now banished me from the soil, I must avoid your presence and become a restless wanderer on the earth. Anyone may kill me on sight. Not so, the Lord said to him. If anyone kills Cain, Cain shall be avenged sevenfold. So the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest anyone should kill him at sight. Cain then left the Lord's presence and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Okay, so of course, the story in the form that we have in the Bible is not original. It's the version of the story that was available to the redactor. The story itself is probably a lot older than that. But in that story, you hear certain themes that kind of hold the whole thing together. Abel is a herdsman, and he came first.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, back then, a herdsman meant open range. You know, we're not talking there's a fence. And,
mm-hmm.
We're talking just they're herding on open range, and then of course the sacrifices to the Lord, you sacrifice an animal. Okay, this particular legend winds up in the Holy Scriptures of who? The Hebrews. What do they sacrifice? Animals. What a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so their stories of origin and clear up to the time that the story was redacted is about herding cultures. Because even at the time the story was redacted, which is probably around 1100 BC, there was a lot of grain agriculture in the Eastern Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
You could only do that in certain areas where it was convenient to do so. And so the basic culture was still a herding culture. And then there was almost nothing in the way of cities. There were little towns in in places where there were concentrations of grain agriculture. But most of the population just lived scattered over the landscape, and were dependent on herding culture. You know, even the time of Jesus, who's Jesus? The Good Shepherd. In the story of David and Goliath, who's David? He's a keeper of the flocks. Yeah. He doesn't get to go to town. Sometimes people bring things to him from town. Okay, so that's why that story's in the Bible, and why Abel is the first. And why he's a herdsman, and he does animal sacrifices, and that's what the Lord prefers. Okay, but there is this phrase in there: "Am I my brother's keeper?" The theme crops up again and again and again in the, for lack of a word, the Hebrew Bible, but it's really better said the cultural underpinnings of Hebrew culture. You are your brother's keeper, and so that's why that's an element in the story. And so then along comes Cain. Cain comes later, because what comes after herding culture? In the perception of the herding culture, they're first, and agriculture is second. Okay, now if you want to go into the really ancient history where nothing is written yet, and go back into the origins of human occupation of that region, it was actually grain agriculture that came first, and the domestication of animals came later. But that wasn't written history. Okay, so in the progression of civilization, you have a grain agriculture, and then what you have is irrigation agriculture in places where there's lots of water, and that provides a concentration of food production where you can build a city and create a civilization. Okay, so we have this little thing where Cain offers a sacrifice of the prime yield of his fields, and you know, who knows what that would have been? It probably wouldn't have been grains of wheat. It would more likely have been fruit of some kind. Oh. But you know, it's something special. I mean, that's what a sacrifice is, right? Mm-hmm.
Cream of the crop.
And so there's these two parallel sacrifices. The firstborn of the flock. And the finest produce from the fields. So it's like a contest. And so the Lord is checking them out, Okay, which Lord are we talking about in this? The Hebrew Lord.
Adam.
Pardon?
The Father, Adam.
No. There's the Lord in heaven is smelling these sacrifices and rendering an opinion on what sacrifices he prefers. Well, since this is a Hebrew story, well, of course the Lord prefers the animal sacrifice because that's what Hebrews do. So anyhow, King doesn't like being told that his sacrifice kind of sucks. And so instead of walking away saying, well, that's just your opinion or something like that, he said, well, I'll also God's problem. I'll kill Abel. So God said, well, just a minute, you know. That's the wrong way to approach this. You know, the devil got into you. So I'm gonna banish you. And of course Cain isn't gonna raise livestock. He doesn't know how. And God tells him, well, you can plant crops from now on, but they ain't gonna grow. So you're just gonna have to be a wild man out in the boondocks. And Cain says, well, wait a minute. If I'm just a wild man out in the boondocks, and I am that because I murdered a guy, anyone can come along and kill me. Okay, this is a Hebrew story. Who is anyone? and who would be out to kill him? People from the herding culture.
Oh.
Okay, so. Okay, so. So anyway, and so God says, okay, well, you know, yeah, what you did does deserve capital punishment, right? Okay, but. But still, I'll cut you a little slack. Okay, well, that's another thing that it's a theme that constantly crops up in the Hebrew tradition. God cuts somebody a little slack. So God cuts Cain a little slack. And he says, well, okay, nobody's going to kill you. And he says, I'm going to put a mark on you. So that anybody that sees you knows who it is. This is Cain, the guy who killed Abel. But he's under God's protection. You don't get to avenge Abel's murder. You don't get to do it. And if you do it, you know, I'll spread the word. You know, I put the mark on Cain. You see a wild man out there. You see that mark? You don't touch that man. He's under my protection. And if you decide you're going to kill him anyhow, because after all, he does deserve the death penalty, and you're pissed at what was done to your buddy Cain, your buddy Abel, God's going to kill you and 7 more of your buddies. So don't, just a warning. Another theme that constantly crops up in the Hebrew tradition. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. In this story of Cain and Abel, you see all these elements that link to this broader Hebrew tradition of their theology and philosophy and their perception of themselves as a hurting culture. But even when they lived, even when Jerusalem was one of the large cities on the planet, and you could argue the most urban. What was at the center of the whole thing? The Passover. The sacrificing the animals. Okay, so. So we find all these themes in there that link directly to this story. The themes in the story that link directly to the broader Hebrew tradition. Okay, but so suppose we start looking deeper into the thing and saying, well, this is what the redactor did to it. But what was the redactor working with? What was the moral to the story? Seeing the links to the broader Hebrew tradition doesn't tell you what the moral of the story is. Okay. So what did Cain do when he had the mark on him? He left for Mesopotamia. That's where the cities are. That's not an element that the Hebrew redactor would have added to it. Just having the mark of Cain would have been okay. That's the end of that's the whole story.
Yeah.
But the original story has Cain going to live in Mesopotamia. That's where the cities are. Okay, so then, this whole thing, so we know something about the original story. It's a story about conflict between herding people and the people that herding people deal with. The herding people... The herding people, and of course, in the Hebrew tradition, this means the Hebrews. They weren't the only herding people around. They have their god, and they sacrifice animals to their god. Okay, well, over in the cities, the people in the cities. They sustain themselves through agriculture, and they sacrifice produce from the fields, and they have their gods. Okay, when you're a herdsman, of living in a region where there are cities, how do you earn your money? You take your livestock to the city. Mm-hmm. You sell your animals.
Yeah.
Cool.
And of course, when you're in the city, you get some of the conveniences of manufacture, the things they make in cities that you don't make out there in the middle of nowhere. You know, some bronze tools, maybe. Some woven fabrics. They make some nice stuff in the city that you don't have out in the boondocks. And so there's actually this, you know, the whole thing is based on reciprocal trade. Okay, well, when you're out in the boondocks raising your livestock, and you have your God and you think your God is the best and all that stuff, okay, when you get to the city, those people are different. And they even worship a different God. And, you know, if you go to the city and then you start arguing with them about their God and tell them, look, your God sucks. You know, our God pisses on your sacrifices. He says your sacrifice stinks. Okay, well, this is bad behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but do people do stuff that's that stupid?
Yeah.
Yeah. They have to be told don't do that by their own God. So, it's... That's the moral of the story. Look, you country bumpkins who live out in the hills and raise cows and sheep and goats, and then you take them to the city and sell them. Those people are different, and they even worship a different God. They don't worship your God. And you may go, and of course, your God tells you that your sacrifice is best. Okay, but your God also tells you that these other people have their other gods and do their sacrifices different. But your God tells you that's okay for them to do it. So when you go to the city for trade, don't get into arguments about gods. You have yours, they have theirs. Of course you think yours is the best because after all it is. Okay, but that's no grounds for you picking fights with these other people who got their other god. So, get along with them, and do your business, and make friends. Don't argue about dipshit. and so that way everybody comes out ahead. We know that sometimes there's fights between different tribes and even between city dwellers and people out in the boondocks. You know, that stuff happens. But if you try to keep that going, the thing that feeds you falls apart. So, you know, don't avenge killings. God tells you, I'll take care of that. Because if you take care of that, guess what happens? The people in the city got a lots bigger army than you do. You kill one of them, they'll kill seven of yours. So don't go there. Okay, so I love the legend of Cain and Abel, because when you start asking questions about it, you know, what is mythology? What purpose does it serve? How does it come down to us in the form of the stories that we get it now? And how can you backtrack that to what, even if the moral of the story is not explicit in the form we have it now, once upon a time that story was told for a purpose.
Yeah.
It was told for a purpose. There was a moral to the story. And once you understand that about how the stories are told, then in many cases you can backtrack and say, this is what it was really about. It was a hell of a good educational tool, teaching people how to behave. Many legendary stories are of this character. Okay, now you can even backtrack it further and say, you can track back further to the principles of evolution. If you got a bunch of stories floating around, and these stories get the people who tell this story killed, and this story, the people who tell that story, they survive. Which stories survive? The ones that tell you how to survive. The stories do crop up that, by golly, they get you killed. Mm-hmm. When you die, the story dies with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's in the natural course of evolution of stories that have an interior meaning, that tell you how to behave. The really stupid ones tend to die out, and the ones that actually make sense are the ones that tend to survive, so that when you look back at these kinds of stories, when you look for a moral to the story, the kind of moral to the story that in general you should expect to find, and let that expectation guide you in discovering that moral of the story, it's going to be a story about how to behave in such a manner so that you survive. And so it, the legend of Cain and Abel is such a beautiful package of how that whole process works. It's right there. It's right there in the Bible, published probably a billion times a year. Some people even read it. But how many people read it and understand what they're reading? You can look in books of the origins of the Bible. You can look in books on anthropology. You can look anywhere for the explanation I just gave you, and you ain't gonna find it. You heard it from Dave first.
Yep.
Like so many things. Why did you hear it, Dave, from Dave first? It's because Dave doesn't try to learn all of the stuff that everybody else is already talking about. That's already been talked about. Dave looks for the gaps, and then asks, "What's missing from this?" And when you fill in that gap, you just went from the back of the class to the head of the class.
Yep.
So that's how we get from the story of Cain and Abel in the Bible to the principle of how you get from the back of the class to the head of the class. Actual demo in real time.